How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 160 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review. Once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com, log on to normantranscript.com, check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. See all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday, Thursday edition right now. The Thunder play San Antonio at home on Thursday night. Could be a little bit of a telling game for the Thunder, who have lost four in a row, all the non-playoff teams. Portland, then Phoenix on the second night of a back-to-back, then Dallas. Those are all on the road. Come home, lose to Portland, give up 126 points. Really horrible defensive performance. They've been pretty subpar defensively in all four of those games, to be honest. And I've got a big piece where I really delved into what the defensive issues have been over the four-game losing streak. That's up on normantranscript.com. You can check that out. Up on Thunder Road, just normantranscript.com/sports/Thunder Road. You can find it there, or you can just go to the website and scroll down, or you can check out my Twitter feed, at Fred Katz, and see that's on there. But I went about 900 words just going over the defense and what the issues have been and what they need to shore up, because there are a lot of different things. I talked about it on the podcast a lot in yesterday's episode. We'll talk about it a little bit, but don't need to go into as much detail today. If you want to see all of that detail, you can check out that piece, or you can listen to Wednesday's podcast if you'd like. But let's talk about the Spurs for now, because that's the hot topic right now. San Antonio just won its 50th game. I'm recording this late Wednesday night. They just beat Sacramento. They were down 20-some-odd points in that game. Kind of had it on the background there. Weston, Kawhi, Leonard. And still, they come back and they win the game. Danny Green had a few threes at the end to ice it. Team's automatic. It's like it doesn't matter who the players are. They could have the staff of the Norman Transcript out there, and they would win 48 games. It's crazy. So 50 wins for San Antonio. That's 50 wins 18 years in a row for them. And that's only technically. Like, it's really 50 wins 20 years in a row. 19 years ago, they won 37 games. But it was a 50-game season because that was the lockout-shortened 1999 season. They went 37-13, and they won the title. 37-13 is comfortably, I mean, that's a 60-win pace, let alone a 50-win pace. So they've actually won at a 50-win pace. In the lockout-shortened season in 2012, when they played only 66 games, they still won 50. They went 50-16. They had the best record in the league that year. Lost in the Western Conference Finals to the Thunder, actually, in six games. But they've won 20 years in a row. They won 50 games at a 50-win pace, I should say. Since they drafted Tim Duncan, they have never failed to get to 50. Pretty unbelievable. They won as few as 50 only once. Aside from that, they haven't won fewer than 54 since 2000. That's unbelievable. It is absolutely crazy. It is absolutely crazy what they're doing. The 560 win seasons in that stretch. This year is almost certainly going to be number six, the second in a row. They won 67 last year. And you know what? This roster is not great. It's not. This isn't a 60-win roster. It's why I think Greg Popovich should be Coach of the Year this year. I know Mike D'Antoni's done a great job. Eric Spoelstra's done a great job. Quinn Snyder's done a great job. Lots of guys. Rick Carlisle's done a great job. There are a lot of good coaches. But a lot of ones that you can make really good cases for. I think it's Greg Popovich. Those other guys, you want to make those cases, I'm fine with that. All those other guys are doing great jobs this year. They're all really good coaches. But Greg Popovich is the best coach in the NBA, and you look at what's happened with this roster. The Spurs are number one in defense right now. They're number five in offense. They're number one in defense. They lost Tim Duncan. And they've remained number one in defense. I was certain their defense was taking a fall this year. And it has, in terms of just how many points per possession it's giving up. But that's mostly just because offense around the league is up this year. Your average points per possession this year is much higher than it was last year. So first place in defensive efficiency is just going to be a higher number than it was last year, when the Spurs were one of the best defenses the league has seen in almost a decade. But they're still first. Number one in defensive efficiency. Once again, to credit to a bunch of guys, it's a credit to Pop, it's a credit to Kawhi, it's a credit to Danny Green, to LaMarcus Aldridge, who's having another really good defensive season. But it's amazing. You look at some of the bigs on that team. I mean, look at the development of Dwayne Dedmon. Dwayne Dedmon has become this stud defensive big man. It's amazing what's happened with these guys, with the way they've developed. It's why everyone respects the Spurs so much. I love it when the Thunder play the Spurs. The reason I love it when the Thunder play the Spurs is because players have this amazing reverence for San Antonio. And the Thunder specifically do. Like, Steven Adams loves the Spurs. Steven Adams has this amazing respect for the Spurs. I bet you if you asked Steven Adams, I bet you would say that, from the way he talks about him, I bet you Steven Adams would say that Tim Duncan is his favorite player ever. And I think that's true for a lot of NBA players, especially NBA big men, that they would say things like that, that Tim Duncan is their favorites. He's got this amazing reverence for the Spurs. Russell Westbrook does too. Andre Robertson grew up a Spurs fan. He wears number 21 in part because of Tim Duncan. But when they lose to the Spurs, they're kind of in an okay mood. And it's because of this respect that they have for them. And you see this around the league. The Spurs are the only good Western Conference team that doesn't have beef with the Clippers. They're the only one. It's because no one has beef with the Spurs. Everybody acknowledges they're on a lower playing field and they're on a lower plane than the Spurs. It's kind of amazing the amount of respect that players, coaches, front offices have for that organization. It's a pretty amazing thing. And what Greg Popovich is doing this year, what this organization has done this year, I think it's been one of their more impressive regular seasons. Now, I think they're vulnerable come playoff time. I think you might be able to kill them in the pick and roll with their backline defenders there. I think Aldridge is a really underrated defender, but with their center defenders, unless they're just going to play Dedmon a lot, which is possible. But I think that you can end up hurting them. You can hurt them if you spread against them in the pick and roll. They still don't have a penetrating guard, which is something that hurt them during last year's playoffs. I think they have defined flaws, but man, what a regular season they're having. Now they're only two games back of the Warriors, who have looked like a slightly different team. I still think the Warriors, with Kevin Durant hurt, I still think the Warriors are going to end up getting the one seed, but man, it's not a given. San Antonio could end up with a better record than Golden State, which would be an amazing regular season accomplishment for them. I think the style in this one will be interesting. The Thunder kind of struggled defensively in those last four games, in part with, you know, Steven Adams straying, guarding stretch fives and that kind of stuff. The Spurs don't shoot a lot of threes. They're mid-range heavy. They work inside. Still a really good offense. They've still found a way to have a really good offense, taking what's in today's NBA age, unconventional shots. But I think that'll be interesting to see. Obviously, it's a great offense, and nobody gets excited about playing the Spurs. Well, I get excited for when they play the Spurs because everybody's in a good mood no matter what. But the players, nobody gets excited about playing the Spurs. But maybe stylistically it'll be a little bit of a change for this defense. You know, Adams can operate a little closer to the basket. We'll see how that goes. Kawhi Leonard will be rested. He did not play in the first half of the back-to-back on Wednesday night when they played home against Sacramento. People got to talk about him more. If the season ended today, and this is subject to change because there's still a quarter of the season left, a little bit less than that. If the season ended today, I would have Kawhi Leonard third on my MVP ballot. I don't know if I'll have an MVP ballot, so I'll just say I would have him third on my unofficial MVP ballot. He's been amazing. And what's incredible about this MVP race is, for some reason, Russell Westbrook's putting up round numbers. So we say triple-double. No one's done that in 55 years since Oscar Robertson did it in 1962. So that's amazing. It's a first-time guy doing it. How can you give the award to anybody else when he's putting up numbers no one's done since Oscar Robertson? But what's amazing, if you look at the four candidates, Westbrook, Harden, LeBron, Kawhi Leonard, those are going to be the top four in some order. When you look at those four guys, let's go through it. Westbrook, 32-10-10. No one's done that since Oscar Robertson. That is true, and that's amazing, and that should possibly get you the MVP, just that alone. Except Harden is 29-11-8. Nobody's done that since Oscar Robertson. LeBron James is, what, 26, 8.8, and 8.2? And nobody's done that since Oscar Robertson. They're all pulling up numbers nobody has done since Oscar Robertson. So this notion that it's got to be this guy because he hasn't done it since Oscar Robertson, or this guy because he hasn't done it since Oscar Robertson, they are all going to tie for being the second guy. They're going to be 2, 3, 4, and guys in history who have put up the numbers that they're putting up. These numbers are incredible, what these guys are doing. And then there's Kawhi. And guys have put up these numbers since Oscar Robertson, but no reigning defensive player of the year has averaged 26 a game. I said this on the podcast the other day. No reigning defensive player of the year, let alone two-time reigning defensive player of the year, let alone two-time reigning defensive player of the year, who's still the best defensive player in the NBA and has a chance to win it again this year, though I think it'll probably go to Rudy Gobert, but he's going to get a lot of votes. He's still the best defensive player in the NBA. No one with that defensive resume, that in that recent history, has averaged 26 a game on almost 50-40-90 shooting. He's 49, what is he? He's 49-39-89 right now. He is so close to 50-40-90 on 26 a game. High volume, and he's going to do it on a 60-win team that has a chance of getting the one seed in the superior conference. Amazing what Kawhi Leonard is doing. Because of the impact he makes on the defensive end, and I know the on-off numbers, but those are skewed to a degree. Because of his impact on the defensive end, I would put him third, and I think he can make an argument for putting him second. I think he can make an argument, honestly, for putting any of these guys first, and I don't think you're crazy to do it. That's how incredible these guys have all been in independently unique ways. Pretty amazing what they're doing. I'm going to get some Twitter questions in a quick moment, but first, I just want to take a second to talk about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for the game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I just used it the other day to look at tickets for Tom Petty when he's coming into town in April. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save the time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LO Thunder, that's LO like locked on, and SeatGeek is going to send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Thunder today.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily Oklahoma City Thunder podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so some Twitter questions. First, from Cassidy Cook. Are teams figuring out they can win if they let Russ score as many times as he wants and just cover everyone else defensively? It seems so. So Russ is shooting a lot even for him these last, like, six games. So let's look at the last six. New Orleans, 29 field goal attempts. Utah, 28. Portland, 36. Phoenix, 30. Dallas, 24. And then Portland again, 39. Over that six-game period, Russ's usage rate is 49.1%, according to Basketball Reference. That's insane. That is really, really insane. Put that in perspective, Russ's usage rate on the season, according to Basketball Reference, is 42%. Usage rate is the percentage of Thunder possessions when Russ is on the floor that end with the ball in his hands. So a turnover or a shot, or a possession where he puts up a shot and he gets fouled. 42% is the highest of all time. In the history of recording usage rate, which goes, you know, back a little bit before the NBA-ABA merger, that's the highest. And Russ is at 49 over the last six games. I mean, he's putting up basically half of Thunder possessions when he's on the floor, for the most part, are ending with the ball in his hands over that stretch. Now, I think some of that is contextual, though. You look at the opponents, he goes to town on Portland in terms of the number of shots he puts up, and that's in part because of the guys who are defending him. I think it's also in part because he's going up against Lillard and McCollum, and he wants to go up against Lillard and McCollum. Phoenix guards him with point guards. When Russ gets guarded with point guards, he goes hard for shots. That's the way he plays. Utah, a lot of those shots went up late in the game when he took over in crunch time. New Orleans, same thing. He had 21 in the fourth quarter, and he was just going crazy. Phoenix, again, they were down in those games. And Russ shoots more when they're down. His usage rate is higher in games when they're losing. They've lost four out of those six games. Phoenix, they were down. He kept putting up the ball. And there was a 5-minute stretch where he was the only guy who touched the ball during the fourth quarter of that Phoenix game. So I think a lot of it is contextual. And keep in mind, the Thunder are not necessarily losing these games because of Westbrook's usage. He played badly in the Dallas game, that's for sure. But they were worse defensively than they were in the Dallas game. And his usage in the Dallas game was actually 39%, which is lower than his season-long usage. This is all according to Basketball Reference usage. Basketball Reference and NBA.com use different formulas for this, for these possession-based stats, which I still think is the dumbest thing in basketball analytics. How the heck can we get everybody on the same page about realizing these stats are useful when they have different formulas based on the websites? But that is a different conversation. It is tremendously stupid, though, and I can't believe it's still a thing in 2017 that you have to clarify. But it is. But the second Portland game, he had a 58% usage. They lost because they played terrible defense. The first Portland game, they lost because they played terrible defense. It wasn't necessarily because of the offense. So I think it's probably more of a coincidence, probably more of just a product of the situation than anything else. Because Westbrook's been good. The offense has been fine. It's been that they've been giving up points on the other end. Next one from Hill I Am. When is Taj Gibson going to get the starting nod over Sabonis? When they first made the trade, I predicted that it would have happened by the end of this road trip they just finished over the weekend. Obviously, that's not the case. Sabonis has started all 7 games since the trade. They're 3-4 in those games. I still think Sabonis is going to start at some point before the playoffs begin. Or I should say, I think Gibson is going to start at some point before the playoffs begin because he's in all likelihood a rental. Not for sure, but they have to anticipate that he's a rental. And I think when you have a rental, your objective is to maximize that player, what he can give you, because you're not playing for the long term. He's a rental. And I think they're going to start Gibson in the playoffs. They kind of have to start Gibson in the playoffs once they're there. And if that's the plan, you got to give the starters some time to mesh with Gibson. You have to give that unit some time. Now, I don't know if that takes 7 games or 10 games or 12 games or 15 games, but there are 18 games left in this season, and you're pushing that point to where you want those guys to gel together. I mean, it's been 7 games where he's been on the roster, and Donovan still talks about how they need to figure out guys and figure out teammates and that kind of stuff. And I think to some degree, maybe that's overplayed. Taj Gibson's an 8-year veteran. It's not like the Thunder are the only team in NBA history that's made a midseason trade. No one's talking about how Lou Williams needs to integrate into the Houston offense. There are certainly things that you have to learn, and there's certainly an adjustment. But that should not prevent you from starting over a guy who's been shooting, 18% or 16% from 3 or whatever it is over the last 2.5 months. And I think Sabonis is going to be a good player, and they think he's going to be the power forward of the future. And I totally see that. I think he's going to be a useful NBA player. I think he's going to be good. But right now he's a rookie and he plays like a rookie. That's okay. That's why they made the Gibson trade. And I think eventually, because Gibson is better suited to help them in the playoffs today and better suited to help them in the playoffs literally tomorrow, Sabonis might be better suited to help them figuratively tomorrow. And that's fine. I don't think it stunts his development if you take him off the bench. Still play him those Laverne minutes, 12, 14, 15 minutes a game, and you're okay. And I think they're going to eventually land on that, but I don't know if it's going to be San Antonio, or the next game against Utah, or the next one against Brooklyn. I don't know which game specifically it's going to be, but I still think it's going to happen because it just intuitively makes sense that it would. Next one, final question from Austin S. 1027. Fact or fiction, Russ needs to average a triple-double to win MVP. So I did talk about the MVP stuff a little bit at the top of the show, but there's less than a quarter left in the regular season, so let's talk MVP stuff. I'm going to say it's fact. I think he does need to average a triple-double to win MVP. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that I think that that's the right way that it should go. But there are going to be an unfortunate amount of voters who will vote for Russ for MVP if he averages 10.1 assists per game, but will not vote for him if he averages 9.9. And that's unfortunate that that's the voter base. I don't know if that's necessarily the majority of the voter base, but I think that's that's enough of an amount that it can make an impact. And I think it's a lot easier to vote for him. It's a lot easier to justify the vote when he's got the triple-double. Because that's his main advantage. That's his main selling point. If you think of these guys as candidates, because that's what they are, they're MVP candidates. That's his selling point. That's his number one thing. Harden's going to have more wins. Harden's going to have the efficiency numbers. LeBron's going to have more wins. He's going to have the efficiency numbers. He's going to have the fact that he's LeBron. Kawhi Leonard's going to have the wins. He's going to have the defense. He's going to have the Spurs lore, which I don't know if that works for you because everyone reveres the Spurs, or if it works against you because the Spurs are so quiet that Kawhi in general is so quiet that they just kind of get pushed to the back of your mind. But I think he needs to get there in order to get enough votes to win MVP. Now, he's darn close. He's right on that line right now. He's averaging exactly 10.0 assists, and he's like two assists over. He's like 10.02 or something like that. 10.03 maybe a game. I actually think he's going to get there. I think he's going to get there, and I hope he gets there because I think it'll make the MVP race that much more interesting, and I'm excited to see how that turns out. Just as a basketball fan, this is fun. This is a fun MVP race. It's been great all year, and the fact that it's still this great heading into the final stretch of the season is awesome, and it's been so great to follow. Remember, I'm on every weekday, Monday through Friday. Head on to iTunes, subscribe to Locked On Thunder. Questions, comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs and check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That's going to do it for today. Back with you tomorrow after the Spurs game to wrap that one up. Until then, Locked On Thunder is locking up.